The next session is back to what is currently being done and the, if you like, the framework probably for everything in terms of where it all sits in terms of financial reporting. So we've got the conceptual framework, feedback received from the exposure draft, and the next steps is our next session. It is scheduled to be for an hour. If we need an hour, we will take an hour. We will break for lunch at 12:30, whatever. If we feel that we're wrapping up early, I might ask one or two of the groups to actually report from yesterday. So just be warned that you may be called upon before lunch to do your follow-up report. And that's not saying we want to cut you short, but we will see how we go. All right, so I will hand over to Rachel and Daniela.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. The purpose of this session, as Joanna has said, is to get your advice, really, on the next steps in the conceptual framework project. We have some questions towards the end of this presentation, which we would like you to address and to look at. This session is particularly timely because we're planning to take a comment letter analysis on the conceptual framework exposure draft to the board in March, and then follow that quickly in April with a discussion about the strategy for finalising the conceptual framework. So questions about what we should focus on, what areas we need to look at in a little bit more depth, what areas perhaps we don't need to look at in quite so much detail. So what I would like to do today is perhaps give you a little bit of background to the conceptual framework project, explain to you why we are doing the project and what our approach has been to the conceptual framework, and then give you a very high-level overview of the feedback that we've received on the conceptual framework exposure draft that we issued last year. I have to caveat this sort of discussion by saying that we're still analysing that feedback. We still haven't posted our papers for the board in terms of the summary of the feedback that we've received, but I will hopefully be able to give you a general indication of what that feedback is saying. I should say that when we prepared these slides, we were at an even earlier stage of the analysis than we are at now, so you might hear some new messages coming out that have evolved as we've looked in more detail at the feedback. So if we move on to just have a quick look at the background of the conceptual framework project and try and explain what is the conceptual framework and why is it important to the ISB. Well, we view it very much as a practical tool that will help the board as it develops standards. And how does it help that? Well, it does that by setting out some of the really fundamental questions of financial reporting and trying to answer those fundamental questions of financial reporting. So it talks about what is the objective of financial reporting? Who are the users of financial reports? What actually makes financial information useful? And then we go on to talk about the fundamental elements of financial reporting. So what are assets? What are liabilities? What are income and expenses? How should those items be recognised, how should they be measured, and how should they be disclosed? So we see it very much as this practical tool to help the board in developing sort of consistent standards that are developed on a consistent framework. It also has a couple of other important aspects to it, in that it is used by preparers to help them develop a consistent accounting policies, and it particularly has a role if there is no IFRS standard that addresses a particular issue. I think it is also important in terms of setting the framework for IFRS and to help people to actually understand the standards and interpret the standards when they're applying them. It sort of sets out the basic concepts that that are used when we're developing the standards. We do have an existing conceptual framework, and that framework has actually proved quite useful to the board over the years in terms of developing standards. However, we decided to revise that conceptual framework because we know that there are some significant improvements needed in that framework. And we've put those improvements into three broad categories. There are gaps in the existing framework, some of it's out of date, and some of it's unclear. An example of the gaps that are in the existing conceptual framework are around some very significant areas. For example, the existing framework provides little guidance on measurement, and certainly no guidance on how you go about selecting a particular measurement basis for use in a particular standard. There are some areas that are also significantly out of date. For example, I think the existing definitions of assets and liabilities don't really reflect the way in which the board has thought about assets and liabilities for many years. And in addition, there are some areas of the existing conceptual framework that are just unclear. For example, it's very unclear what role measurement uncertainty plays in questions about recognition or measurement of assets and liabilities. Because of these problems that are associated with the conceptual framework, it was identified as a priority project by respondents to our previous agenda consultation, which was why the board decided to put the conceptual framework on its agenda. So where are we in the project? Well, we've already issued a discussion paper and an exposure draft. The comment letter deadline on the exposure draft expired in November of last year. We're busy putting together the comment letter analysis for the board, and in April of this year, we will decide on the strategy for taking the conceptual framework project forward. So having briefly told you what the conceptual framework is and why we're doing a project on the conceptual framework, what I'd now like to do is to explain to you the responses that we received in response to the exposure draft of the conceptual framework. We not only received a large number of comment letters on the exposure draft, in excess of 230 comment letters at the last count, we also did quite a lot of outreach meetings with interested parties, particularly focusing on users of financial statements. And the comments that I've made, that I make, not only reflect the feedback that we received from the comment letters, but also any sort of feedback that we received from those additional meetings that we held during the comment period on the exposure draft. As I've already said, this is all sort of very sort of preliminary views in terms of what the comment letters are telling us, but I think it probably is a reasonably good reflection of what they say. I'd like to start off with some high-level messages that we got out of the comment letters, and this was around whether we were right to do the project in the first place. And I think it's fair to say that there is broad support for the idea that we should be revising the conceptual framework. And I think this view was also carried through to some of the preliminary analysis that we've done on the agenda consultation, which again seems to reflect the idea that the conceptual framework project should be a high priority for the board, that we should be looking to finalise that project. I think it's fair to say that some saw the conceptual framework exposure draft as a significant improvement on what we have in the existing conceptual framework. But there were also some significant concerns about at least some aspects of the proposals in the exposure draft. In particular, there are two areas that people have highlighted as needing more work, and I think that's around the measurement chapter of the conceptual framework and the discussion that we have in the conceptual framework on reporting financial performance, and in particular around the distinction between what should go in profit or loss and what should go into other comprehensive income, and whether things that are in other comprehensive income should be recycled. We've also had some comments that perhaps we should take a little bit more time to develop some areas in the conceptual framework, and the areas usually quoted are those around the use of other comprehensive income and also around the area of measurement. So a few of the sort of high-level messages that I think are coming out of the review we've done. What I'd like to look at now is the first two chapters of the conceptual framework and the responses that we have had to that. The first chapter of the conceptual framework deals with the objective of financial reporting, and the second chapter talks about the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. So what is it about information that makes it useful? These two chapters were developed jointly with the FASB back in 2010, and because they were developed relatively recently, we are actually proposing only relatively minor change, well, significant changes, but to a small number of areas within those chapters. The first thing to note is that we're proposing to give greater prominence to the notion that investors need information about management stewardship of an entity's resources. At the moment, we do acknowledge that information about stewardship is needed in order to meet the objective of financial reporting, but I think there is a concern that the existing conceptual framework doesn't give that notion enough prominence. And so we decided in the exposure draft to propose giving the idea a little bit more prominence. And I think there is broad support for this idea that stewardship is important, and actually we should give it more prominence in the conceptual framework. I think one thing that we are hearing back is that some would actually like to see us giving even more prominence to stewardship and perhaps identifying it as an additional objective of financial reporting, in addition to this objective that we have at the moment of providing decision useful information. But that's probably a minority of the views out there. The second area I'd like to touch on is one that I've discussed before with the Advisory Council, and it's around the area of prudence. We had calls for a reintroduction of an explicit reference to prudence within the conceptual framework, and that is what we have proposed in the exposure draft. We describe prudence in the exposure draft as the exercise of caution under conditions of uncertainty. And again, I think there has been a broad welcome for this idea of a reintroduction of prudence. And I think most of the people who have commented are actually in favour of this idea of prudence as caution under conditions of uncertainty. However, there are a significant number of commentators who would actually like, again, to see us go a little bit further in this discussion of prudence and to acknowledge that what we have termed asymmetric prudence might have a role to play in financial reporting. What do I mean by asymmetric prudence? Well, I mean that you might want to require more evidence for the recognition of assets and income than you would for the recognition of liabilities or expenses. Another couple of areas to touch on, I think the explicit reference to substance over form that we propose to introduce into the conceptual framework has been broadly welcomed. And then finally, I think the explanation of the role of measurement uncertainty and the effect that it can have on things like measurement and recognition, I think again has been broadly welcomed. The reporting entity chapter touches on an area on which the existing conceptual framework has a significant gap. We say very little about the reporting entity, and I think the basic ideas that we have in proposed in the exposure draft have been welcomed. They are quite high-level ideas. We don't say who should or must prepare financial statements. We just simply say that a reporting entity is an entity that reports and then try and provide some explanation of what the boundary of that reporting entity should be. I think the main feedback that we've had on this chapter has been that we probably need a little bit more guidance in some areas. So some of the discussion that we have around control, people have asked for more clarification of what we've meant by the terms direct and indirect control. And we've been asked for more guidance on things like carve out and combined financial statements. There's also been a bit of concern about a statement in the exposure draft that, in general, consolidated financial statements are likely to provide more useful information than unconsolidated financial statements. And I think there's been some concern that that might be straying into standards-level detail. In terms of the elements of the financial statements, we have proposed revised definitions of assets, liabilities, income, and expenses. And I think broadly people have welcomed these revised definitions. I think the big tension point around the revised definition of assets and liabilities is the suggestion that we remove the term expected from the definition of assets and liabilities. And instead we replace it with the notion that it must simply be an asset, for example, must simply be capable of producing economic benefits. Some people would like to see expected remaining in the definitions, but again, I think that's probably a minority of the responses that we were looking at. There has been a call, though, from quite a number of people for us to do some sort of effects analysis on our proposed changes to those definitions to try and identify what possible effect that could have on future standard setting. One area that we didn't touch on in the conceptual framework exposure draft was the distinction between assets and liabilities and the problems associated with that distinction between assets and liabilities. And what we've done is said that we will try and address those issues as part of a separate project, what we've called our financial instruments with the characteristics of equity project. That proved to be quite a controversial decision. We had an alternative view from two of the board members on that decision not to include the question of how to distinguish between liabilities and equity within the conceptual framework. However, I think responses to the exposure draft have been broadly supportive of that approach on condition that we do give a very high priority to that research project, which will look at the issue in much more detail. The other area I probably should just touch on is some proposed guidance that we had in the exposure draft on the meaning of the term present obligation. And what we have proposed is to actually expand, if you like, the definition of a present obligation obligations that an entity has no practical ability to avoid. And there were quite a lot of questions around those proposals and what they would mean, and some concerns about what it would mean for particular types of liability. And I think we'll need to look at that in a little bit more detail during the redeliberations. Touching briefly on recognition, our proposal as far as recognition was concerned was to move away from the sort of the criteria that we have for recognition at the moment, which say that you must have it must be expected, or it must be probable that be an inflow or outflow of economic benefits, and that the asset or liability that you're recognising must be capable of being measured reliably. And we've moved away from that towards something which much more closely aligns with the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. So we say that for you to recognise something, it must be relevant and it must be capable of faithful representation, and in addition, recognition must meet the cost-benefit test. We then go on to provide some examples of situation where recognition might not provide particularly useful information. And they touch on some of the things that were in the old recognition criteria. So they touch on things like measurement uncertainty. They touch on things like existence uncertainty and outcome uncertainty. We've had some mixed responses to those recognition criteria. Some people have welcomed the idea that we're aligning them with the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. However, we have had some calls from in some areas for us to go back to, in particular, the probability recognition criteria that we have in the existing conceptual framework. We have some guidance on derecognition. This talks about what you're trying to achieve with a derecognition transaction, and doesn't necessarily provide you with definitive answers on particular areas, but what it does do is it provides you with a way of thinking about decisions about derecognition. And I think people have been broadly supportive of those that derecognition discussion, but again, would perhaps like a little bit more guidance in some areas. So moving on to measurement. As I mentioned in the introduction, I think measurement is one of those chapters that we have received most feedback on in terms of people wanting more, people wanting perhaps more analysis in this area and perhaps further work on the area. A couple of things to highlight. I think I've put here on the slide that there was some support for a mixed measurement approach. I think that significantly understates it. I think nearly everybody supported the idea that if you think about the qualitative characteristics of useful information, the cost-benefit, and the objective of financial reporting, you're likely to end up with different measurement bases for different types of assets and liabilities. I think there was also, I think, broad support for the description of the measurement bases that we had in the exposure draft, in that we characterised measurement bases as either being historical cost or current value, and then we subdivided current value into entity-specific values, being value in use and fulfilment value, and market participant approach, which would end up with you using fair value. And I think those descriptions were supported. I also think the factors to consider when selecting a measurement basis that we outlined in the exposure draft were, again, broadly supported. However, where people do want more work is around the descriptions, so around discussions of entry versus exit. We have very little discussion about that in the existing conceptual frame, in the proposals in the exposure draft. I think there were some concerns about the treatment of current cost. And I think there are some concerns that the guidance on the selection of a measurement basis might not be sufficient for the board to actually make decisions in standards. That it, in a way, it sets out a number of factors, but it doesn't give the board enough direction to make consistent decisions when setting standards. And in particular, I think people wanted a little bit more linkage between the description of the measurement basis that we had in the exposure draft and the criteria for the selection of the measurement basis, so the factors to consider. Moving on to the other area that I think raised most concerns, and this is around the reporting of other comprehensive income. What we did in the exposure draft was provide some very high-level guidance on profit or loss and other comprehensive income. We talked about profit or loss being the primary indicator of performance during a period. We then said that because the profit or loss is the primary indicator of performance in the period, we would expect all income and expenses to be reported in profit or loss. However, we then did go on to say, well, there might be an exception if you can argue that if by reporting an item of income and expense in other comprehensive income, you would actually increase the relevance of the information in profit or loss. We then went on to say that we would have a presumption of recycling. So if you report something in other comprehensive income, there is a presumption that it will ultimately end up back in profit or loss, that you will recycle it at some point. But we did say there might be situations where you would want to rebut that presumption. Now, I think some people welcome the guidance, and in particular around the statement that profit or loss is the primary source of information about financial performance. I think that resonated with a lot of people, in particular in the way that a lot of investors look at the financial reports. However, I think there were some concerns that actually the guidance didn't go far enough. In particular, people would like us to have done something like defining performance or defining profit or loss. These were areas that I think ideally the board would like to have done, but we really struggled to come up with anything for the purposes of the exposure draft, but people are still asking us to go back and perhaps think about this. I think there was also some support for the idea that perhaps we'd gone as far as we could go in the conceptual framework, but we might want to think about this a little bit further as we went on to develop, as we look at some other research projects outside of the conceptual framework, and in particular the primary financial statements research project that we're working on. As far as recycling was concerned, I think some there were split views on that. Some people would like us to see us requiring recycling of everything. Others would say actually they don't want us to recycle. And again, there was some support for the rebuttable presumption that we had. Just touching on the measurement and OCI questions, one of the comments that we got on both of those chapters was that the board should perhaps look at doing some more work outside of the conceptual framework and then potentially look to revise the conceptual framework at a later date once the results of that additional research work had come forward. So this idea that some people talked about and expressed as being the conceptual framework being a living document, something that we shouldn't just pack away in the bookshelf and say, okay, that's finished and we're not going to look at it for the next 20 years, but something that as and when we make developments in other research projects, we should be looking to revise going forward. Which brings me to the end of my brief summary of the feedback that we received on the conceptual framework exposure draft, and brings me to the questions that I would like you to address and the advice that we would like from the Advisory Council. In particular, what advice do you have for us in terms of completing the conceptual framework? What do you think about the timetable for the project? Should we aim to finalise it relatively quickly, or should we take more time to do more work in some areas? Are there some parts of the conceptual framework we should delay finalising and do more research? Touching on this idea of the conceptual framework as a living document, do you think that that's a good idea, that we should keep the conceptual framework open and revisit it at later stages, or do you think it's something that we should finalise and then not touch again? Are there topics that are not addressed in the exposure draft that you think should be addressed? And do you have any suggestions for what our strategy should be on those two particular problem areas that identified around measurement and other comprehensive income? With that, I'll hand back.
Thank you very much, Rachel, for that presentation. And just looking at these questions and hearing you speak, you're not asking for a lot from the members sitting around here. However, I think that it certainly is, in terms of what you've said and us hopefully having thought about it a little before, in terms of being able to provide you some thoughts and some advice. So, ladies and gentlemen, I certainly encourage you to do so, and obviously a number of you are ready to do so. So I will start with Surya, who had his flag up first.
Thank you, Joanna. I thought it interesting There was a slide that said this was identified as a priority project in the agenda consultation of 2011, and we are still talking about it. So I think we can't take forever on something that has been identified as a priority. So one suggestion I would give, especially for the contentious areas like other comprehensive income or measurement uncertainty, we always believe that the enemy of good is perfection. So let's get to an 80-20 fix it, especially since we all say this is not a standard. You can get to perfection in the standards, but get the conceptual framework out there 80-20 and keep rolling it forward so that the next standard will be in line with the conceptual framework. And we can revisit this at a later stage.
Thanks, Surya. Roger?
Well, we already have a conceptual framework, and I think the proposed conceptual framework is, in many cases, a substantial improvement. So I would not hold up bringing in the new conceptual framework. On the other hand, there are clearly areas which do require more work. So to me, the conceptual framework should become a living document rather than something that should be cast in stone and then not looked at again for 20 years. And I think if it is regarded as a living document, it is then much easier to update certain aspects of it, for example, measurement, for improvement. So I would actually finalise quite as promptly as possible, then I understand that takes a lot of work, but then not be afraid to actually open up bits of it and amend it.
Isabel?
I would underline that the distinction between liabilities and equity is a key matter, especially for cooperatives. It is now being considered in the research project, and we think that before finishing the conceptual framework, it would be more appropriate to wait for this project to be achieved. Thank you.
Thanks, Isabel. Roxana?
Thank you. Just to echo that previous comments on the distinction between equity and liability and then the project on performance, which is key for us, and I think we asked for that for a while. So probably pending to that, and because decisions which would be taken in those projects might have an impact on other chapters in the conceptual framework, so eventually keep those chapters on OCI open. And a second thought about, I remember there was some discussion at a certain point whether the ISB will produce a kind of effect analysis on the impact of the changes in definition on assets and liabilities. I just wanted to know whether that it's still on the...
In terms of the effects analysis, we did a limited effects analysis in the exposure draft where we identified inconsistencies between, or what we believe to be inconsistencies between what we were proposing in the conceptual framework and the existing standards. One of the key questions I think the board is going to have to address is whether they want to do more than that in terms of effects analysis. There are some considerable challenges, I think, to doing a more detailed effects analysis, because one of the problems you've got is that in order to be able to establish the effects, you would have to look at each of the individual standards and in a way try and second guess the decisions that the board would make when developing the standards for those particular in those particular areas. So in effect, you then get into trying to, if you like, do standard setting activities on the entire suite of standards, which is a very difficult thing to do. You can have some general ideas of what the implications might be, but actually getting into a detailed effects analysis, I think, is actually quite a difficult thing to do. So I think it's going to be one of the quicker questions: what is possible in terms of an effects analysis, and what should we be doing in that area?
Donita.
Thanks, Joanna. Just to echo a little bit what Roger said, I think that there has been some really good work done. Ideally, we would want the complete framework to be issued, but recognizing that it is going to take more time to finish the projects on OCI and liability equity, I think I would probably opt for issuing what we have now are issuing that update, and then as the board continues to work on these other aspects, and so I guess in that regard, looking at it as a living document. But you know, another comment, it seems to me that the board is going to have to tackle financial performance and performance measurement before it can really make substantive progress on the OCI question. And I think once that happens, or if that happens, then I think some of the measurement questions may become a bit more clear as well.
Thanks, Tanita. Shizong?
Thank you. Three comments and suggestions. The first one related to terminologies used for the objective of financial reporting. This morning in an emerging market breakfast meeting, I also mentioned that we have confusion between stewardship and accountability. In the mission statement, we use the term accountability. But in the conceptual framework, we use stewardship. So I hope that the board will clarify or define the exact meaning of these two terms. Because in Chinese, you will translate these two terminologies into Chinese. It's very, very difficult to translate it. So we got to know the exact meaning of it. And I hope that you use only one word. Sometimes you use accountability, but sometimes you refer to stewardship. So I hope you use just one. The second related to the law of business model. As we all know that in the IFRS number 9, business model determines the classification and measurement of financial assets. But what's the theoretical foundation for this? So I hope that the board will discuss more about the law of business model in the classification and measurement. The third one is related to prudence. The reintroduction of prudence is highly welcome because prudence in many countries is considered to be part of accounting culture. So I highly welcome this reintroduction of these concepts. But very unfortunately, the meaning of prudence in the exposure draw have been modified significantly. So the meaning is not the same as the original one. So if the meaning changes, I'm wondering is it still suitable to use the prudence or we should change it, or we should choose another terminology for this one. Thank you.
Thanks, Shizong. John?
Yeah, thank you. It's the discussion on the living document issue, which I found very interesting. When our board was finalising our public sector conceptual framework, we did actually have a proposal to treat it as a living document, and also a proposal that we should fix a time after which we should review it. And the board, on both occasions, decided that they didn't want to commit in those areas. Now, in terms of the living document, yes, I think it's important that a conceptual framework is not left on a shelf to fester for 10, 15 years. Yet at the same time, if you're going to modify the conceptual framework every time at standards level, you decide that in order to meet the objectives of financial reporting, you need to conflict with the framework, I think you're actually neglecting the accountability dimension that the framework provides. So it's getting that balance between not treating it as something which is going to just lie there, you know, not reflecting modern thinking, and at the same time, it's bedded down enough that you can treat it as an accountability mechanism for the standard setter.
Thanks, John. Lotta.
I think my neighbour was first, but...
Sorry, I only spotted them both at the same time, so I took a guess.
I think the liability equity definition is a very important thing, which we're looking for, but also some other complex issues like OCI and classification and measurement. And I've been struggling with this since the beginning, basically, whether this umbrella document isn't too broad, and if not the basic standard setting principles and definitions of key issues within accounting are a little bit two different things, and whether they shouldn't be separate, which would mean that the principles could be probably less controversial or less detailed, could probably be issued faster, and then really dig into these other things we mentioned, which would be a definitional paper. And again, that would be a much more living document, whereas the underlying fundamental principles would be, of course, should be much more steady. That's just something which, you know, continues to bother me.
Colin.
Thank you, Joanna. Yeah, it sounds like there's quite a lot of common themes, actually, and I'll kind of build on those a little bit. First of all, though, I'd like to congratulate Rachel and her team. I think they've done a really good, you know, job on this. It's obviously a very big project, and it touches a lot of areas. And I think to echo some of the points that Lothar made, I think given it's a principles-based framework, it's, you know, reconciling that with 220 pages of conceptual frameworks, obviously, somewhat problematic, but I'll do the most frustrating thing for you guys, and actually, well, I want more, which is what you don't want to hear. But yeah, I think the couple of points I would sort of tease out, and you know, a lot of them have probably been started on earlier. I do believe that the performance reporting is really crucial, and I understand that's a very big area. The OCI, you know, some conceptual foundation for what OCI is trying to achieve, I think, needs to be looked at, and I take it that's a very deep analysis, and that will probably have to be ring fence separate from the conceptual framework so as not to overly delay it. But I do think that should be a key focus. I'd counsel you to take that forward urgently. The other thing is, I think some people have mentioned, you know, the definition of prudence and, you know, this concept of asymmetric prudence versus prudence as defined in the conceptual framework. I mean, certainly from my perspective, I understand both arguments, and, you know, it's not a clear-cut decision, but I do feel having the concept of asymmetric prudence relegated to the basis of conclusions is not overly helpful, because I'm not saying it should be in all instances you should have asymmetric prudence, and, you know, assets are harder to recognise than liabilities, but I do believe that kind of the framework you've actually built is probably appropriate. Where there's uncertainty, you could maybe build in some asymmetry. I just feel from an investor perspective, management bias tends to be to overstate, and I think having a check against that, you know, when it's a bit uncertain and there's a lot of judgment to be exercised, would be helpful. And having that codified in the standard and very transparent and clear, rather than relegated to the base of conclusion, I think would be a helpful development.
Thank you. Holger?
Yeah, you also asked the question whether in terms of the timetable we should move on or conduct more research. And as a researcher, I would have all incentives to say, yes, do more research. But, I mean, openly speaking, on the most controversial issues you have on there, like measurement or other comprehensive income, generations of academics have disagreed and continue to disagree. So no matter what you do in terms of research in the next couple of years, you know, there will be disagreement. So I'm not sure that will really help in those controversial areas. Yeah, that's just an open and honest feedback from academia.
And the best person to say it is someone from academia. Yeah. Ton.
Yes, thank you. I would like to echo as well that the distinction between liabilities and equity is an important issue where more work should be done in our view, and the performance reporting as well. Although what was said before. Regarding stewardship, we believe it is good that it gives more prominence in the conceptual framework. However, we would not agree on a separate objective because it could conflict with the main purpose of financial statements, and that's making decisions, economic decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Pam.
Thank you. I wanted to echo what John had said about, I think, the living document phrase that you used caught all of our attention. Because when I think about a principles-based set of standards and a conceptual framework, those words to me mean that there should be some durability to what we come out with, and that if it needs to be amended frequently, we haven't really achieved that state of durability recognizing, though, as Danita said, that there are one or two problematic areas, and so perhaps we have to issue a 2.0 and a 2.1 version, but we shouldn't be looking at version 3 right away. Because in particular, as you said, the analysis is very hard to determine the impact on individual standards, and we could, I think, have some unintended consequences around impacting the standards if there's too frequent an amendment. And Colin reminded me with his remarks, we had a conversation at dinner last night, and the concept of asymmetric prudence, when I'm speaking with people in my organization who come from a finance and economics background, they're quite baffled by the idea that one would have this asymmetric prudence and not faithfully reflect the economics of both sides of a deal. So that becomes, I think, a difficult conversation as an accountant to try to explain to people that, yes, the financial statements are intended to represent the substance of the economics, but we like to be really conservative when it's the good stuff coming in. And that's a very challenging conversation that I think then puts us into the relevance conversation with folks from that kind of background. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Micheline.
I'd like to give some support to the idea that if you're changing a definition of the word prudence, you should be thinking about using a different word. I think if you keep the same word, you're going to have a very large challenge in education and having people understanding the new concept with having the same word there. So,
can I just address that point about the definition of prudence? We have broadly used the same language that was in the previous conceptual framework, so in the 2010 conceptual framework, which defined prudence as effectively the exercise of caution under conditions of uncertainty, and didn't talk about asymmetry other than to say that we shouldn't have asymmetry, we shouldn't end up with excessive provisions, we shouldn't, etc. So I don't think we are necessarily redefining what we have previously meant by the term prudence. I think the problem that we're against is that there are other ways in which the term prudence have been used more broadly, perhaps, for example, in the academic community, where I think the idea of asymmetric prudence is much more common and is the more normally used meaning of the term. But I think as far as we're concerned, we are using very similar language to what was in the old framework.
But you are facing a real challenge because the understanding of the word is different, and that may be an indication that it's not the best word to use.
A very good point.
I personally find this whole discussion maddening, and it is very interesting when you read. I read a lot of comment letters about prudence, including those who agree with our definition and the others who say we want asymmetric prudence. And they all want the same outcome. They all say we want accounting to be neutral. And we don't want deliberate understatement of liabilities or of assets or deliberate overstatement of liabilities. So we want neutrality. So the outcome is, the desired outcome is the same for both camps. And yet we are having these huge fights about this word. It is maddening.
Which means
to me probably better not to change too much. Then everybody can have his own meaning.
Okay. Well, we've got Hans passionate.
irritated.
Okay. Well, there we are. What's the definition of passionate? And I think irritation is a subset of passionate. Yeah. There you are.
Okay, all right.
So, on that note, I think that brings to the end, by the looks of it, the comments. Oh, sorry, Vincent. Why do I keep missing you?
This corner, I guess. Just some comments on the liabilities equity. I think many speakers have emphasized the need to complete that. And I think the point that's been raised by Holger is an important one. It may be an intractable problem, though, when you consider the number of models that have been on the table. And also, from a user standpoint, whenever we've had debates on this issue, it's clear that when you look at the equity perspective vis-a-vis the fixed income investor perspective, the different views on where you should draw the boundaries. And I was just wondering whether it's more fruitful rather than having this quest for the Holy Grail to have an approach where you prioritize one set of users, that's the equity investors, and really consider just coming up with a disclosure solution for the rest of users of financial statements. So as opposed to keep having this quest for one answer that will satisfy everybody, perhaps you should think of disclosure as a complementary approach.
Well, I think you know, we have a whole project on liabilities versus equity. I think one very likely outcome is that there is at least going to be a subclassification within equity between different classes of equity, which is not a disclosure, but a presentation on the face.
Chen Yu, sorry, I missed you before as well.
Thank you. First of all, we do appreciate the efforts by the SB to improve the conceptual framework, and we did see some improvement. However, we expect the SB to have more research to make more improvement, especially in the following three areas. These three topics are based on our consultation with the Chinese stakeholder. They are very concerned about the three areas, and they want to see improvements in this area. The first one is OCI, and I think some members also mentioned that. The second one is we suggest retaining the probability criteria as part of the recognition criteria. The third one is about the measurement. In our view, the use of more than one relevant measurement basis should be limited, and we also suggest IB provide some guidance or principles on in this area. A general comment that we want, because the conceptual framework is very important in the IFRS system, so we want ISB to have more research before finalizing it to ensure a stability of the conceptual framework in the future. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now, Rachel, I don't know whether you would like to make any comment as a result of all of those, or you've got some advice. It's certainly not, surprise, surprise, consistent advice. However, I think there are some themes coming through there, and obviously the living document idea, there are people from one side to the other, but I think the balance aspect and taking into account the stability and maybe even the idea of having the different levels that a real high level conceptual, you know, is stable, but then the things underneath potentially to move. And I certainly think for me that the comment around Holger's comment around, well, actually, however much research you do in some of the areas, you're certainly not going to get the right answer because people have been doing it for years and disagree. So certainly those are some of the themes that are coming through to me. And so performance reporting and FICE seem to be the two projects that clearly link with the finalisation of this. So that's what I got out of the, if you like, at a really high level, but with some additional specific comments that I thought were particularly useful for you as well. So do you have any disagreement with how I've summed it up?
No.
You're allowed to do that, by the way.
No, I think you summarised it very well. And what I was going to say is reiterate what I said at the beginning of this discussion, is that this is a really timely discussion because we're going to be talking about the strategy with the board in April, and we will make sure that we feedback the comments that we've received as from you and the advice that we've got from you to the board, so they can factor it into the decisions that they make about how to finalise the conceptual framework going forward. So thank you very much.
And I think we'll leave the last comment on this one to Hans.
Well, I think in the final document, I think we have to publish something soon. I think in the final document we should be able to do a bit of a better job on measurement than we did in the previous version. If that, it will not contain all the final answers, but I think we should be able to give more guidance on measurement than we did. I think the principles we evolved around OCI are more meaningful than a lot of people think. And I think they could give us, that we could provide more guidance around OCI in practice in the performance reporting work that we are going to do, and which will probably not conflict with the principles that we have developed this far. So if it's necessary to, I'm thinking, you know, if there is a need to revisit the document in 5 years' time, we should not feel hindered to do so, but hopefully we can do a lot of work which will not make that necessary. But there's still a lot of work to be done in the next couple of months, and I think we'll be able to make some good improvements.
Okay, thank you very much, Rachel and Daniela and Julia. And I certainly, you know, echo the comments that have come from a number of members here in terms of you've obviously done a fantastic job getting this far. Yes, we're not there yet, but you know, keep up the hard and good work. Thank you.